Browns fans, don't miss A Legacy Unleashed at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, celebrating the greatest and most iconic moments in franchise history. For a limited time, now through April 21st, fans can immerse themselves in the Browns' rich history and get up close and personal with legends like Ozzie Newsome, Josh Cribbs, Bernie Kosar, Eric Metcalf, and many others. A Legacy Unleashed, for a limited time at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Get your tickets at profootballhof.com today. Welcome, everyone, to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. I'm Dan Lobby. I'm joined by Mary Kay Cabot and Ashley Bastock. Now, in the second half of this podcast, we're going to do a little OTA preview. That was Ashley, Scott Patsko, and me. But first, we're just going to start the podcast off. We all just watched the HBO Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel, the interview, two of Deshaun Watson's accusers speaking to Soledad O'Brien. We both just watched that. We're recording this late on a Tuesday night. It was Kyla Hayes and Ashley Solis who did the interviews with Soledad O'Brien. So Mary Kay and Ashley, I will just start here. It didn't feel like there was new information necessarily here, but this was kind of the first time where we've seen two of the accusers sit down and do an interview like this. So I guess did you learn anything new? Did your perspective change, Mary Kay? I mean, what was your impression of sort of this 20, 25 minutes?
Well, you know, the accusers, they seemed very credible. I mean, and we know that, that Rusty Harden has said that they're lying. We know that Deshaun Watson has steadfastly maintained his innocence. So I was curious to see, you know, what they seemed like, and did they seem credible? And they actually did seem credible to me. I mean, not actually, but I mean, they did seem credible to me. They seemed very sincere. They got very emotional at times. Both of them did. And so it was difficult to watch, but Deshaun's camp, they knew that this was going to be a hard thing to watch, and that this, in the court of public opinion, when you have a woman describing an encounter like that, that's going to be a hard one for Deshaun to win that battle. So I guess that's the first thing that came to my mind, is that, you know, that they did seem very, very genuine in what they were saying. But again, we haven't, you know, Deshaun Watson seemed genuine in what he was saying when we interviewed him at the press conference. So right now, it really is a matter of he said, she said, and it's a difficult thing to get through.
Yeah, you know, I think watching it for us as people who have been following this obviously extensively, I don't know that this was anything new that we hadn't heard before. But I do think what's interesting with a program like this, especially Real Sports, like, I think this is going to hit a wider audience that maybe hasn't been following this, like, to the same extent that, you know, we as reporters have, or people in Cleveland. And like Mary Kay was saying, like, these interviews aren't an easy watch. And I think if you maybe aren't as familiar with the case, that is going to hit you. But for me, overall, it was just, as somebody who has been, like I said, kind of following this, and we've been immersed in it and immersed in Deshaun Watson being here, I'm not sure what the reaction is going to be like for people who have maybe known this information already. But for people who are hearing it the first time, I think it's going to be a jarring watch more than anything. And to hear people tell their own story like that on video, I think is always going to have that effect. And that's what the medium does when you're telling a story that way.
I think that's a good point, that the idea of, like, we've been so immersed in this. And I know a lot of Browns fans have been very immersed in this, and NFL fans, you know, at least in Houston and here, have been so, like, they all know the details. But there is a large segment of the population that probably doesn't. They know something was amiss. They know that maybe there's the 22 lawsuits, but they probably haven't been following as closely as we do on a daily basis, right? Because it's our job. Or for Browns fans, this is the quarterback that the Browns traded for. So Mary Kay, I suppose that's kind of the effect this could have, is this is going to show more people kind of what these accusations are, hearing from two of the accusers.
Yeah. You know, I think that most people probably haven't really read all of the interviews, haven't really read all of the lawsuits, haven't seen some of the interviews, because Ashley Solis was actually, I think both of them have been interviewed on TV before, but not national television. So I do think that a lot more people probably now are forming their own opinions about what actually happened. And the important thing to note is that Deshaun Watson declined to be interviewed for this. So this wasn't a situation where you could see the he said, she said part of this. All you really got to see here was the she said, and then his lawyer, one of his lawyers, Leah Graham, came on at the end and spoke on behalf of Deshaun, but he declined HBO's request to be interviewed for this because he's in the midst of the NFL investigation and didn't want to do anything to, you know, to jeopardize that. So he didn't really have a chance to defend himself against what they're saying. But I mean, right now it really is a case of just their word against his.
So Rusty Harden has sort of been doing a little media tour. It started when you talked to him, Mary Kay, and then he's since has gone on a podcast. I know he was on 92.3 today. Like I said, we're recording this on Tuesday night. He released a video statement. You can see that in Mary Kay's story at cleveland.com/Browns. Kind of a lot of the same points, again, that we've heard. And this is sort of where we're at in this case. It is just sort of a lot of, we've heard this before, and both sides are just kind of reiterating over and over again what they believe. But that being said, I do think it's telling that it almost feels like Rusty Harden has conceded the court of public opinion here. He kind of has just said, we're not going to win that battle. Mary Kay, though, does that affect the NFL at all? If they lose in the court of public opinion, which it feels like they mostly have, does that affect the NFL's decision-making process?
Well, you know what? I think the NFL will do its absolute best to try to just block out all the noise, to block out all the different, HBO specials and the things that the lawyers are all saying now, and just try to really focus on the interviews that they've done with the accusers and with Deshaun. They spent 3 days with Deshaun last week. They will probably talk to him again. And I think the NFL will really try to just administer this discipline based on what they have found themselves. As we know, they don't even go by whether or not you have civil suits against you or whether or not you've been indicted criminally. It's a situation where they will decide if his conduct was detrimental to these women and detrimental to the NFL. And if it was, then he will get suspended. And I do think that that Rusty Harden sort of is maybe perhaps getting a vibe that, that the NFL might come down a little bit hard on Deshaun Watson right now.
Yeah, Ash, I'm just curious, as you sort of have observed this, do you kind of get that same feeling that maybe they're getting a little uncomfortable? You know, like I said, he's been doing a lot of media. They did decide to respond to this stuff, as they said in the show, at the 11th hour. Are you kind of getting that vibe too?
Yeah, and that's what I was going to bring up, was the fact that they made note of it in the piece that originally his camp said, no, we're not going to comment for this. And then they had Soledad O'Brien interview Leah Graham. They made her available at the last second. So she appeared, it looked like, via Zoom. You know, it was a video interview done remotely. So I understand that, you know, that they're in the sense of the public opinion, that they're trying to do what they can to maybe help themselves with that and help defend Deshaun Watson in regards to some of those feelings that are floating out there, especially knowing, like Mary Kay said, that they figured that this was going to be a brutal watch. Like, they were open about that. So I definitely see that that's kind of what's going on from a PR strategy. But, you know, I am just, I agree with Mary Kay that I don't know how much, knowing like how the NFL works, I don't know how much all of this, the outside noise outside of their own investigation, how much it's really going to impact what their ultimate decision is in terms of a punishment.
So Mary Kay, we are closer to this, though. We are closer to the NFL. Obviously, civil cases were still like a year away from these things getting heard, but we're closer to the NFL likely handing down their initial punishment. And Roger Goodell spoke about that today.
Yes, he did. At the owners' meeting in Atlanta, he did acknowledge that the NFL is getting close to wrapping up its investigation, that the lead investigators, Lisa Frio and Jennifer Gaffney, are just about to wrap up their findings and hand over the investigation to former U.S. District Judge Sue L. Robinson, who will determine the discipline. So that's significant for him to say that they're at that point now where they're winding down on the investigation. Now, when I talked to Rusty on Friday, he did say that he thought that they wanted to talk to Deshaun again and that they wanted more discovery in this investigation. So, you know, does getting, you know, this happening shortly, is it in 2 days that they're going to hand this over to Sue L. Robinson? Does that mean another week? Are they going to talk to Deshaun on Friday? I mean, I don't know. I mean, for Roger to characterize it as this will happen shortly, I thought that was very significant. I think it means that sooner than later, we will all have a pretty good idea of what the initial suspension for Deshaun Watson is.
And look, the NFL has like a timeline that they have to adhere to, right? Like, Ashley, they need to know. I mean, they've got, for as silly as it sounds, they have ticket sales that fans want to know, teams need to know. The NFL, if they have a chance to get this thing kind of ironed out before the season, they need to do that. They're sort of stuck on this timeline that, again, isn't necessarily relevant to the courtroom.
Right. And it's like a few weeks ago, it felt like there was maybe more smoke coming up for, maybe this suspension decision will be pushed off until these civil suits are done. Like, that was something you kind of were hearing all over the place, but I think that's kind of gone away now. And especially, like Mary Kay said, for Roger Goodell to say what he said, like, that was very definitive to me in a way that they really haven't been with this. You know, typically it's been statements about, you know, it's an ongoing investigation and they're not going to comment on it. But for him to make the comment that, you know, they are getting closer to that decision, I think is like one of the most definitive things we've heard in this investigation.
Okay. Anything else on that we missed that we didn't discuss from this that stood out to you guys from this? Again, it just feels like, we're mired in this for another year. But I guess, there's always that settlement option, right, Mary Kay? There's always that possibility. We know Rusty Harden has essentially confirmed that they were trying to settle these cases so Deshaun Watson could get traded to Miami during the season last year. It didn't happen. So we know that stuff has been on the table. Does it get more realistic, I guess? If Deshaun gets suspended, could they decide, okay, let's just get these out of the way now. Let's just put these behind us.
Yeah. When I talked to Rusty Harden on Friday, he said that right now they are solely focused or mostly focused on what the NFL is going to decide. Once the NFL hands down its decision, then they will probably revisit the notion of possibly settling these cases. I don't think anybody involved in this wants this thing to continue to drag out. The trials wouldn't even happen during the season. So you're talking about all of next season going through all of this when supposedly at one point, a lot of the women were willing to settle for almost what would be considered sort of a nominal amount of money. So I don't think that he is going to, I don't think the Haslams want this to drag out. I don't think the Browns do. I don't think, I do think that they will at least entertain the notion of settling these cases once the NFL decides what it's going to do.
And again, I've pointed this out before, but like this is what the Browns signed up for. So If Deshaun doesn't want to settle and these things drag into next year, this is what they signed up for. They knew what they were getting into when they made this trade. So nobody should feel bad for the Haslams or the Browns or Kevin Stefanski or Andrew Berry. This is, they knew what they were getting into. Mm-hmm.
They did. They absolutely did. But, you know, sometimes things can have a tendency to get a little larger than life. And I think now they're starting to see how this, you know, is going to be a whole lot more than just a difficult press conference and then you start to move on into football. This is not going to be like that. If these cases are not settled, this is going to be an enormous distraction for a lot of people, including people that are triggered by these types of situations. So there are a lot of layers to this. It's very, very complicated. And I would just have to think that at some point that they will seriously consider trying to put this behind them and having it work out in the best way that it can for everyone involved.
Okay. So that's our reaction there to the Real Sports interviews, the Real Sports with Brian Gumbel interviews by Soledad O'Brien of two Deshaun Watson accusers. Again, two of the 22, it was Ashley Solis and Kyla Hayes. We're going to switch gears. We're going to take a break and switch gears. OTAs are underway in Berea. And so after the break here, Ashley, Scott, and I are going to give you some things to watch during Browns OTA practice. This is covering the Browns right now. It's talking about this and then switching gears and talking football. So Mary Kay and Ashley, I appreciate you both staying up late to do this. We are back on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. We'll shift gears here and talk a little bit of OTAs. They started on Tuesday. We will be out there today for the first time. 10 OTA practices, of course, in the mandatory mini camp in the middle of June. Ashley Bastock, Scott Patsko with me now. Scott, why don't you start us off? What are you watching here in our kind of condensed glimpse at Browns OTAs?
I feel like I'm supposed to say the number three receiver because that's like our cliche over the past few years, pretty much ever since I've been on the beat. Who's going to be the number three receiver? But I'll start at the top with just what this offense looks like when they line up. You know, they're obviously tight end heavy the last couple of years. And I remember watching training camp. It might've even been some OTAs, but definitely training camp. A lot of fullback on the field last year. And I don't know if that was, who knows why that was. Maybe they were just doing that when we were there. And we just happened to see every single play they had for fullbacks on the field. You know, it was Andy Janovich and Johnny Stan just rotating at fullback. And it didn't really turn out that way. So what you do see at OTAs isn't always the best indicator or what you see at training camp, or at least what we see. Isn't always the best indicator, but I think everybody's going to be kind of tracking, you know, how many tight ends are they using? How often is Njoku out there by himself a lot? Do they have three wide receivers a lot? Because every indication seems to be that they're going to adapt this year to things that Deshaun Watson does. And that might not necessarily be the things that Baker Mayfield did. And, you know, I'm anticipating a lot of two tight ends, a lot more wide receivers on the field. So that's one of the things I'll be kind of tracking, because I think this is really the first time we're going to see those guys on the field lined up like an offense, and we'll just kind of go from here.
Yeah, Ashley, that should be, you know, it's one of those things that really in training camp when we're there every day, we really get a good feel for what the offense will look like. But this is our first opportunity to see, you know, who's where, kind of what it looks like. Are they in 11 personnel? Are they four wide? Are they, like Scott was saying last year, are they running fullbacks? Is Johnny Stanton on the field every single snap? I'm really intrigued by all of that.
Yeah. And it's just the added element, like Scott touched on it on the end there, like Deshaun Watson is so different from Baker Mayfield. So like, how does he look? And Dan, I think you wrote about this, like just in general, how is he going to look connecting with these receivers, especially? But obviously last year, you know, I think the 13 personnel thing is something we've talked about pretty consistently in the last few months about, we think it's something that's going to change. The Browns use 13 personnel like far more than any other team in the league last year. So I think it's feasible to think that that looks different, and how exactly it looks different. And like Scott was saying, how many more receivers are we seeing on the field if they're using 13 personnel way less?
Yeah. And sort of to piggyback off that, Scott, the other part of that, here's your third receiver discussion. You know, I remember the first year Kevin Stefanski was here, and this was more training camp because they didn't have an offseason program. But, you know, we kind of showed up and all of a sudden, you know, JoJo Natson was getting work as a receiver. And I don't think a lot of people expected that. So, like, How often do we see Jakeem Grant? You know, where does he play? When does he play? Is he sort of at the back of the line? Is he, you know, things like that are always kind of interesting too, as we sort of work through these formations. And, you know, like, what if Jakeem Grant is just in the slot a bunch? I think that's something that could tell us sort of what this offense might look like.
Yeah, I remember Kadarius Hodge getting a lot of first team reps, and that caught people by surprise. Like, oh, okay, I guess he's going to be a big part of this offense. Didn't really turn out that way, although he did have a lot of big catches that year. I think when we're watching the team practice and they do full team drills, they could be doing those plays for any number of reasons, just because this is the day to work on that or whatever. But we're trying to gather all the information and track it and find the clues and everything. So yeah, when you see Jakeem Grant taking a jet sweep, or even Anthony Schwartz, you know, there's different ways you can use these guys. Seeing Dimitri Felton getting like a bubble screen or something like that. So that sticks in your head because it's kind of out of the ordinary. But yeah, I think how those guys are used, because we kind of have a sense, I think, that like Cooper, DPJ, and probably David Bell, I guess, maybe just based on how we think he's going to be in the slot, or maybe your top three guys. So you look at the guys below that, and you wonder, well, how are they going to get on the field? How are they going to be used? And now is the time to kind of get those glimpses.
All right, Ashley, why don't you give us another thing to watch here over these next few weeks?
Yeah, I'm going to go on the defensive side of the ball with something that we've talked about a lot lately, in particular with in regards to Martin Emerson these last few weeks. And I'm just curious to see what it looks like. Who is all getting reps in that slot corner position with no Troy Hill anymore? How much is Greg Newsom going to work in there? How much is Martin Emerson going to work there? I'll shout out to Doug. Will AJ Green get some looks? Where's he going to fit in on this defense, if at all? What are his reps going to look like? I'm just curious to see like the first initial glimpses of what it looks like. And quite honestly, like to zero in a little more, like how Martin Emerson is actually going to look out there with some vets, because like we said, he stood out when we were at rookie mini camp, but the next step is kind of getting those guys in with the veterans and seeing what they look like. So I'm really curious to see what his role is going to be, and just in general, who plays and in that slot defensively there.
I think that's one of my favorite things, Scott, is seeing these guys. When we see them in rookie mini camp, like they should look different with a bunch of tryout guys, but now seeing them with the veterans, it's always kind of a reminder of like, oh, yeah, these guys have only been in the NFL for a couple of weeks, whereas, you know, Denzel Ward and Greg Newsom have been around a little while.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking about this the other day, and I wonder if we're overthinking it. Like, like slot corner is like such a specialty, right? But now it's normal, because 11 personnel, three wide receivers on the field, that's what teams in the NFL run most often. Like the average for that grouping is like over 60% for the last few years. So it's there. So defenses have that quote unquote slot corner on the field almost all the time, because that's like base defense. There is no more like real 3-4 or 4-3. It's that extra corner in there. So are the Browns just going and saying, you know, we don't need a slot corner. Could be Emerson, could be Newsom. We're just going to have three really good cornerbacks. Or we're going to have three really good safeties with one able to play anywhere. And remember, the Browns play a lot of zone. So, it isn't so much maybe tracking those guys man on man in the slot. It's being able to drop and being able to pick people up and communicate and all that. And it's definitely something I think we're going to be watching. Like, does the rookie work his way in there right away? Is it greedy Denzel and Greg Newsom? I do think those three guys are probably the ones who we're going to see out there first. Who knows, you know, how they're going to match up though.
I thought one of the most interesting things Kevin said during rookie minicamp was, and I think I believe him when he says this, is Ashley, it sounded like he feels whoever's going to man that position, whether it's by committee or whether they have somebody who's going to be their Troy Hill this year, it sounds like that person is on the roster.
Yeah, because he made that comment about, we feel like we have multiple guys that can handle that. So it is interesting to figure out, like, okay, does that mean it's going to be by committee then? Or is, and I've said this before, like, is Kevin Stefanski just being, you know, typical Kevin Stefanski and giving us the coach speak that is kind of required at this stage in May, whatever month we're in now. So I am curious, like, I do think they feel like they don't need any help at that spot. And again, I think, like, when they drafted Martin Emerson, people were kind of like, huh. And then the following day was when they traded Troy Hill. So then that move all of a sudden made more sense. So I don't know, maybe they really see something with him there that they're confident that he could maybe take over that primary role. I don't know. But at the very least, it sounds like they think that they have multiple guys who they could be giving looks there.
He had zero snaps in the slot last season in college, just for the record. So, but again, it's all about traits and not so much have you play there, but, you know, do you have the ability to play there? So,
all right, I'm going to go with one because why not? We have to talk about this guy, and I've already started doing detective work on this by going slow motion.
You're going to say
on a Browns Twitter clip to kind of see where this guy was at the time, because everybody was sort of in the picture and it sort of looked like he was with the running backs. So, and I think this has real roster implications. What is Demetric Felton exactly? I want to know, is he anything specific? Is he a wide receiver? Is he a running back? I mean, Scott, you've said it, like, this team's not going to keep five running backs. So there actually are, like, real roster implications to where Demetric Felton is or how they view him.
Yeah, I know what he is. He's Duke Johnson. That's what he is. Because we had these same conversations X number of years ago, you know. He's following Hugh around, going to different meetings, and now he's another guy. The same deal. I went back and I look at, you know, how many running backs have they kept and how many wide receivers have they kept the last few years? You know, and is he one of the top four running backs? Well, there's also the fact that they haven't cut any rookies yet. So how do you fit him into the running back room if you know who the top three guys are, but then you got Jerome Ford there. Does Demetric Felton also go there? I don't know. If he's a wide receiver, well, then you're looking at, you know who the top three guys probably are. Then you got Schwartz and Grant, who seems to be somebody they want to do multiple things here. So there's one spot left. Does that mean it's Demetric Felton is your final receiver, or is what happened to Michael Woods, you know? Somebody they drafted. So it's a big mystery. And I think that's, who knows? Is he going to be on the roster? Maybe he's trade bait. Who knows? It's all a mystery right now. And I think probably even more so than Duke Johnson, because I think Duke had accomplished more as an actual running back than Demetric Felton obviously has yet. But, you know, again, it's somebody who you're trying to figure out a way to get the most out of him because you know he can do multiple things.
And Duke was like, Duke was sort of a poor man's Kareem Hunt in some ways. Like, he was effective as a runner. He was effective as a pass catcher. We saw it. Part of that was because the roster was so thin during those years. So he was able to get on the field pretty easily, but he at least showed, like, hey, I can do all of these things. Maybe I'm not going to be your featured back, even though he believed he could have been a featured back. And maybe I'm not your slot receiver, even though he believed he could have been the slot receiver, but he at least showed that he could do those things. And with Demetric, Ashley, it was really just sort of little glimpses last year. We never saw it with any consistency.
Yeah. I forget what podcast last year, I think when we drafted that draft class and we're like, we have no idea. Like, I have no idea what his role on this team is going to look like this year. And just like Scott kind of laid out so nicely, like who is he going to get reps over? And like, how is he going to actually get on the field at either of those spots? And how might he even make the roster at this point? So there were those glimpses, but was it enough to guarantee him a role in either of those positions, given the new pieces they brought in? Because like, they didn't bring in Jerome Ford for nothing, right? Like they saw something there. They talked about, they liked his ability to be super active in the passing game as well, which he did, you know, really just in 1 year at Cincinnati. So it is curious. I think it's one of the bigger mysteries that we're going to go into training camp and OTAs watching for. So I just honestly right now just don't have an answer besides I don't know. I don't know what his role looks like. And I'll be honest about that.
Well, and part of it's going to be like, what day are we out there? Like,
Yeah.
Maybe we show up there tomorrow and he's working with the running backs, and then, but Tuesday and Thursday, he was busy working with the wide receivers. And
did your detective
sort of at the mercy of the schedule.
Did your detective work yield any answers? Did you think you saw him maybe?
Well, okay. I think I saw a number 25, and this is very much a think I saw standing with the running backs while the receivers were catching passes from Deshaun Watson. But it also looked like there was a group of receivers working elsewhere on the field. So maybe they weren't going through the same drill. I don't know. It was all very, but it looked like I saw 25 with the running backs. I spent way too much time on this trying to like full screen the video and like use a little slider. It's bad.
Here's what we got to be careful of here. All right. This is like the third receiver trap all over again, but it's just in a different situation. We can't spend too much time on Demetric Felton because, again, we're talking about the fourth running back or the fifth or sixth wide receiver. And who knows if he's even going to return kicks because, again, you have Grant. I think a lot of fans might look at him the same way they looked at Duke and think, but he could go somewhere else where they're going to know how to use him and it's just going to be a big failure by the Browns. But that really didn't happen with Duke Johnson. But I'm ready for that. Like, he's going to go to Kansas City and they're going to know how to use him. And you know, it's just going to be a bad situation. But again, I think we're talking about a guy who's down the depth chart. But there's just, you look at him, you're like, man, there's so many possibilities there. I think because there has to be something he's really great at. Right now he's good at a lot of stuff, but what's he going to be great at to get him, you know, higher up on a depth chart there?
That's what, like, it kind of reminds me, like, when I talked to JOK last season and, you know, was talking to him about his own versatility and, like, how he's so good at everything. And he's like, yeah, but, like, sometimes that can hurt you. Like, having, you know, too much versatility can almost be a bad thing because, like you're saying, Scott, like, you're not mastering one thing.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Demetric Felton, like, you know, JOK wasn't talking about him in that situation, but that whole conversation is now basically what we are having about Demetric Felton. Like, has he gotten caught up in being a jack of all trades to a point that, and I wonder this, you know, last week, like, is it more harmful than helpful in his own development and in finding a role on a roster?
And I do think most guys probably benefit from like, okay, this is your position. You're going to play it. And that's where we're going to put you. I think a lot of guys that end up being hybrids, partially for what you were saying, Ashley, like being hybrids can, like, that's not great. Like, you should just be what you're really good at. And that's the position you should play. But in theory, we think like, oh my God, this guy's going to be a million things, but those guys are pretty rare.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think it takes like a really special player to like JOK to excel at that. And you have to have a certain kind of athleticism and not like football IQ, I guess, to handle all those roles and make things translate onto the field.
Okay. I've got another one here and I'm curious if you guys have other ones too, we can get in. But I'm just curious what you're going to watch with Deshaun Watson. Because obviously, you know, look, the quarterback can't get hit. A lot of this stuff is going to be scripted. They can do 11 on 11 in this phase, but it's not going to be, you can't tackle to the ground, all of that stuff. So it's going to be very light contact, but you know, for me with Deshaun, one of the things I really just want to watch is sort of the non-football stuff, like the, I guess that has double meaning in the case of Deshaun Watson, but I just mean the between play stuff, like how's he working with his receivers? How's he interacting with his teammates? Just little stuff like that to see how teammates are responding to him. Obviously, you know, I'm not expecting anything terrible. I just want to see how he works with people. You know, I thought, one of the things that I thought Baker Mayfield actually did well in the last year was he would take that time between reps and he would talk to Jarvis Landry and talk to Odell Beckham and he'd go through things with players and they'd rep things. Him and Austin Hooper did it a lot. It didn't translate to the field for various reasons, but I just want to see sort of all those interactions between plays with Deshaun Watson and kind of see what his approach is, I guess, is the face of the franchise and the quarterback of this football team. What are you guys watching with Deshaun over these next 3 or 4 weeks?
For me, it's just like how decisive he is and how, because sometimes when you're at this stage of the year and if you have a new offense or a new coach or whatever, you're still learning everything. Trying to get a gauge of where he might be with that. And again, sometimes a drill is just about going through progressions and you're going to hold on to the ball. And a lot of these things are just walkthroughs. Sometimes they don't even throw the ball, but when they do, you know, how quick is it coming out? Does he know exactly where he's going? Stuff like that. Not to read too much into it, but I think that's something I'm looking for. Just try and figure out if it seems like he's where he should be. And I'm sure Stefanski will probably talk about that as well. And even Deshaun.
Yeah, like you said, Dan, I feel like it's so hard when you're not getting like the full picture of contact or anything like that. But I think for me, it's like we've talked so much about some of these returning receivers and a guy like DPJ, for example, who in theory were like, maybe they look a lot better with Deshaun Watson throwing them the ball than they did last year when Baker Mayfield was. So again, that's like kind of dependent on attendance, even just, and there's not that full speed action happening, but it is going to be like kind of our first glimpse just at how well he connects with these receivers, how him and Amari Cooper connect. And again, all of this is not going to be like your typical game speed, contact, all that stuff, but it is just kind of a glimpse into what could be these next few weeks, especially.
Okay, Ashley, did you have something else?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just curious in general, the big news of the weekend that Jadeveon Clowney is coming back. So number one, is Jadeveon Clowney going to show up these next couple of weeks? We've talked about it. We've wondered if Jadeveon Clowney will just show up for the first mandatory thing that he has to show up for. But, you know, this defensive line now, I think, is so interesting when we were talking about roles, because Myles Garrett gets his buddy back. So are they going to be using like Chase Winovich more in that Tack McKinley role, which I think is what we've kind of speculated? And you give a guy like Alex Wright a bit more time to develop, and you get to move Chase Winovich around, which is something he did in New England. So I'm just kind of curious to see who is showing up on that defensive line, and it, depending on who's there, what that looks like. But again, I think that's another position group where things are going to be a little attendance based. So until things get the mandatory stuff starts, I don't know how good of a picture we're going to get with all that.
I'm looking, I found a post here from a blog that said players who should have been at OTAs last year, and Jadeveon Clowney was on that list. So apparently he was not in attendance last year and seemed to work out fine for him. I mean, Scott, I do think one of the reasons Jadeveon came back, and I hope when we get to talk to him, we'll have an opportunity to hear about this, is I do feel like this organization took care of him physically. Now, obviously, I'm sure there was the $11 million as well for 1 year, but the organization took care of him physically. He was allowed to kind of do what he needed to do to be ready on game days. And I think he felt the healthiest he's ever been. So, you know, if he shows up and signs his contract and takes off, that's okay. It would be nice to see him, but you know, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. You know, I think maybe, I don't know, at that point in your career, do you want to go about learning another defense and getting used to new guys? I mean, he's getting used to playing you guys this year, at least next to him. But yeah, I'm sure the money was probably at the top of the list on why he came back. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm going to be watching the defensive line as well, maybe like the interior. I remember last year, and it was probably camp, I think Sheldon Day was like first team reps so often. Didn't really work out like that during the season, but I think everybody wants to see how that works, because there's just so many unknowns. You know, is Winfrey there next to Elliott, and where's Tommy Togi? I fit into that. We kind of know now that Clowney's back in the fold, how that rotation is probably going to work. You know, everybody kind of settles in on the edges, but that interior, who knows? And they may just start rotating a lot of guys in, and we'll just come away from OTAs not really having much of an idea of what's going on. But then, and also at center too, I mean, just the interior trenches in general, how do the rotations at center? Is Nick Harris getting all the first team reps? Are they rotating in Ethan Posich? We don't, you know, stuff like that. So it's the middle of that line is still very much up for grabs, it seems.
Yeah. That was the other one too, Ashley. I wanted to see like where, yeah. I guess, where's Perrion Winfrey, right? That's where, yeah. That'll be like the question of the day every day. Where's Perrion? I think we'll be able to find him. Just look for the guy that's big and barking, but like, where does he line up with these defensive tackles?
And I'll especially be interested considering I took him sixth in our Andrew Berry draft picks draft, and I got some grief for that. So I want victory lap if it is deserved in you know, a couple months, whatever. But yeah, you know, I think the big thing with him that we've talked about again, and like Greg Newsome told Mary Kay this for that story she did on his friendship with Perry and Winfrey, that basically he outlines it. When you have a guy up the middle who can bring that pressure, it basically makes the offense play right into their hands and send those guys to the edge. So overall, I just think like I'm really curious to see how effective he is at creating that pressure and what it looks like when we actually see it out on the field with some of those defensive ends. And overall, I just think, like Scott's saying, there's a lot of competition in the middle of both lines on both sides of the ball. So that is, I think, maybe the position battles to kind of be watching for, and who's getting reps and how do they look, and all that sort of stuff.
So Scott, was that your other thing there? Have we covered all your bases?
Yeah. I think that, the interior there is the other thing I'll be looking at.
Okay. Well then there we go. Our OTAs preview here on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Three practices will be open to us over the next 3 weeks. And then mandatory mini camp is June 14th to 16th. We'll be out there for all of those. So make sure you're a Football Insider subscriber to get texts, get the newsletter, also get access to stories that we write that are behind that paywall. You got to be a Football Insider subscriber. It's cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. And of course, subscribe to this podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Rate and review us too. Mary Kay was on earlier, and for Scott and Ashley, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening, everybody.